Did you want to go watch it? All right, the want to open up this shiur with a question. It's really posed by the Emek Bracha. Anyone familiar with the Emek Bracha? Very. If you haven't seen the sefer, it's a very worthwhile sefer. It was written by a tremendous Talmud Chacham who wrote his most famous work is on Seder Zeraim, actually. That's why he's not that well known, because not that many people get too deeply into Seder Zeraim. But he is appropriate to some degree for tonight, in that we tonight, of course, commemorate the Yortzeit of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. And the Emek Bracha was a very much a Talmud of Brisk. He was one of the major Talmidim of Rav Aaron's uncle, the Griz. And he asked the following question. If I asked you, Simchas Beis Shoeva, what is the source for the Simchas Beis Shoeva? What is the impetus for the Simcha and the whole celebration of the Simchas Beis Shoeva? Right? So what everybody understands it to be, the common answer, like Yanki just said, is the Nisach HaMayim. It's the ceremony of what took place in the Avoda on Sukkis. Instead of Nisach with Yayin, there was a special Nisach with Mayim, which the Gemara discusses at length in Sukkah, I think starting somewhere around Memches, and goes through a whole discussion of the whole Tekes by the Nisach HaMayim, and then it gets into the Simchas Beis Shoeva itself. So the Gemara you have in front of you, actually, I'm starting on Daf Nun, is the first place where the Mishnah uses the expression Beis Shoeva. So if you take a look, it confirms what Yanki just said. It confirms that the source for the notion for the celebration of Simchas Beis Shoeva is really the Nisach HaMayim. If you look in Rashi, that's underlined. So he says, when it's talking, the Mishnah is talking about the Chalil that was done either 5 days or 6 days. So what is this Chalil referring to? It's the Chalil of the Beis Shoeva. And Rashi points out, Merabo Simcha LeBeis HaShoeva, right? Beis Shoeva, Kol Simcha Zu Eina Ela, Bishvil Nisu Chamayim. Kedim Mefaresh, Ushafte Mayim B'Sason. Right, the Gemara learns out that the whole concept, the whole link between the Shoeva and Simcha is that pasuk from Yeshayahu, right? Ushafte Mayim B'Sason. Sason meaning Simcha. And if you flip over on the other side, you see the Gemara gets into it. There's a whole discussion over there where, again, Rashi and the Gemara, Pashut Pshat, seems to say that the source for the Simchas Beis Shoeva and the whole celebration was the Nisuch HaMayim. But the Emek Bracha points out, however, which is really fascinating, and which is really going to be the topic that we're going to discuss, is the Rambam totally disagrees with that Pashut Pshat. Right? The Rambam Kedarko, the independent thinker, has a completely different understanding about what was the source for Simchas Beis Shoeva, one that is going to give us tremendous insight into the meaning of Simcha, what the true meaning of Simcha is. So if you look in Hilchos Lulav Perches, the other handout, so in Halacha Yud Beis, the Rambam says, Afal pi shekol ha-moados mitzvah lismoch bahen, even though there's certainly a mitzvah of Simcha in every yantiv, b'chag ha-sukos, haisa sham b'migdash, Simcha yisera. Very important words, right? However, in the Mikdash on Sukkis, there's something special. There's a Simcha yisera. And what's the source of the Simcha yisera? What's the source of this very, very special and unique Simcha above and beyond the Simcha of every other yantiv? So he quotes the pasuk, and nothing to do with the Nisuch HaMayim. He quotes the following pasuk, V'samachtem lifnei Hashem Elokechem Shivas Yamim. And then he goes through a description of what we understood to be the Simchas Beis Shoeva. So clearly the Rambam is talking about the same Simchas Beis Shoeva that's in the Gemara, that everybody, including Rashi and other Rishonim, associate with the Nisuch HaMayim. But the Rambam says that's not its source. The real source of the Simcha Yisera, the very special, incredible, all the hoopla, anyone who goes through the Gemara is very impressed with the description there, it's a sound and light show, and the Chachamim were doing these amazing feats, juggling 8 torches, 4 torches, and I think Rav Shimon Gamliel was able to bend over on his toes and bring himself up, all these amazing stuff. So the Rambam says, not Nisuch HaMayim. It's coincidental, almost. The only reason it's associated with Nisuch HaMayim, and it's called Simchas Beis Shoeva, the Rambam points out, or the Emek Bracha points out, is because it happens to be they would be celebrating and having the Simcha all night, and then it would end off in the morning with the Nisuch HaMayim. So the Simcha that they were celebrating kind of correlated nicely and was juxtaposed to the Nisuch HaMayim, and therefore it was called Simchas Beis Shoeva. But it wasn't the Nisuch HaMayim that generated the Simcha, it was something else. It was this, V'samachtam lifnei Hashem Elokeichem Shimas Yamim. Now, what is that pasuk?
Why didn't they do that the first night? Why didn't you have the Simchas Beis Shoeva on the first night?
So we'll see that they had it every single night afterwards. Yep. You're asking why not even the first night? Okay, so well, let's see. I think you'll be answered when we answer my question first. This pasuk, what's the beginning of this pasuk? What comes before v'samachtem shivas yamim? What's that's the second half of a pasuk? V'samachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yamim. What's the first part? Anyone know? Yes. Who said it? U'lekachtem lechem b'yom harishon. Right? Preitz hadar. Right, so what is it? This is what Emek Bracha points out. What is the Rambam really telling us is the source of the Simcha? It's the very special mitzvah of taking the Dal Minim in the Mikdash for the days of Sukkot.
Why
is he just giving you? Because he's emphasizing the Samachtem Lifnei Hashem. He's emphasizing the Simcha part. And it's that Pasuk, right? That is the tzivoy, it's almost the din d'oraisa, to have a Simchas Beis Shoeva. The tzivoy of the Simcha Yaseira comes in Samachtem Lifnei Hashem. You're right, it's a little disconcerting, especially with the Chiddush that the Emek Bracha developed, that he doesn't also mention, and by the way, it's the Dalad Minim that is the charge. But, nevertheless, it certainly is. It's the Dalad Minim that's the beginning of that Pasuk. That's the tzivoy, right? The Rambam understood there's two mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah of Lekichas Dalad Minim Begvulin, right? Which was a plain old taking of the Dalad Minim on the first day. And there was a very special, special mitzvah of taking the Dalad Minim in the Mikdash that was the real generator of the Simcha of the Simchas Beis Shoeva. So the question is, what the Emek Bracha does not explain, and that I want to hopefully attempt to explain, is what is that association? Why should Lekichas Dalad Minim be associated with this incredible Simcha Yisera that is so special? That would be the first question that I wanted to tackle. If you look through the rest of the Rambam, there's 5 other questions that I would want to try to answer, all from this Rambam as he goes on and on. The Rambam continues, and he says that first he describes exactly the way, like the Mishnayos and the Gemara explain, the way the Simchas Beis Shoeva was set up. And then he mentions the following. He says there was, of course, all the music and the singing. Why was that necessary? If this is a spiritual Simcha, Lifnei Hashem, why was it so critical to have all the hoopla? Why do we need all the craziness, so to speak? All the fanfare, the music and the singing and the eating and the drinking. Why is that such an important part of a Simchas Beis Shoeva altogether? He certainly bizmaneinu. We definitely feel that the eating and the drinking is a critical part of the Simchas Beis Shoeva, right? Would anyone argue that? Absolutely not, right? So why? It seems very non-ruchnius. So that's the second question. The third question is, the Rambam mentions, who is it the ones that were really participating or acting out the Simcha? Only the Gedolei Ha'am, right? The Hamon Ha'am was watching and being inspired, but this was really bedafka done by the Gedolei Yisrael. Why? They're the only ones that can participate in the Simcha. And it's not just Kohanim. It's Yisraelim too, but it had to be the Gdolim. So that's another question. Finally, he in Halacha Tesvav, he calls this an Avodah Gedola. HaSimcha sheyismach Adam b'asiyas ha-mitzvah u'b'avas ha-kel she-tziva b'an. Avodah Gedola hi. Wow, this is a very hard thing to do. So we want to understand that as well. What's so challenging? So let me just summarize the kind of questions, but what we really want to answer is the following. The Rambam, clearly, as the Emek Bracha explained, understood the simcha of the simcha b'shoeva to be generated not by Nisuch HaMayim, but clearly by this mitzvah of lekichas dalad minim in the Beis HaMikdash. Why? What's so special? Where's the simcha coming from the dalad minim? Number two, it is something that required a lot of gashmius, external fanfare to generate the simcha, which is supposed to be a very ruchnius simcha l'fnei Hashem. What's the role of all the gashmius? Why is it dafka the gedolei ha'am that are doing it, and why is it such an avodah gedola? So, I have a mahalach to answer this question based on some teachings of several gedolim, but I wanted, of course, to somehow connect the shir to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik himself. And I was very intimidated by it, especially following in the footsteps of Rabbi Hartstein, who was such a Talmud Muvok of Rav Aaron. And really, I used to watch him. I was in YU at a time when Rav Aaron was there and had his whole table of Talmidim. It was a very select group. They really, I would put it this way, they gambled to some degree. It was not easy to hear Rav Aaron at this point in time. He spoke very softly, and you had to be very dedicated, and it's a tremendous chus that Rav Hartstein was able to do that. It afforded him a tremendous position to be able to speak in the memory of his Rebbe. So I was pondering this with one of my kids when they reminded me, actually one of my kids in Eretz Yisrael, and I was asking him for some kind of idea what I could do, and then he reminded me that I actually was Zocha myself, very fortunately, to have three personal interactions with Rav Aaron. And I think that all three of them supplied very, very useful mussar, very useful lessons that will actually facilitate the answering of our original four questions. It's a very interesting thing. Last night, I was at a Simchas Beis Shoeva where I heard Rav Yosef Gavriel Bekhofer give an interesting analogy. He said, he has an ongoing debate. I don't know anyone who knows Rabbi Bekhofer. He's a very interesting person. Okay. Oh, right. He came here for a Shabbos once. Yeah. Very, very fascinating person. Yeah. Big Talmud Chacham. And he has an ongoing sort of debate with Rav Meir Schiller, who I'm sure you've all heard of as well. Two very colorful characters, right? And two very brilliant people. They're very, very smart. So a debate, you can imagine, could be a fascinating thing. And one of their topics of debate is spectator sports. One is adamantly opposed. They think it's the biggest waste of time. And it really has nothing to offer to young yeshiva bachrim. And one is very in favor and sees great Torah Mada in spectator sports. So we don't have to get into that. I know you'd rather hear about that debate right now. But I'm going to still segue to where I'm heading. But what Rebecca Offer mentioned, which was I found very useful for me to make the point that I want to make right now, is he said even though he thinks that spectator sports is a big waste of time, so now you know who said what. Was that good? He did mention the following. He said that he thought that he could get one little bit of mussar out of it. He said like this. He said, when a person goes to watch, let's say, I'll use, Michael Jordan's not a good guy to use these days. I'll use somebody else. Think of a baseball player that's got great fundamental skills. So, even though you could never, dream to be a hitter like, I don't know, who? Derek Jeter, right? You never can imagine that you're going to be the next Derek Jeter. But, why do you go to watch him? You go to watch him because you're even if you don't even pick up a thing from him, you're inspired. You know, it makes you want to run out there, get to your next little softball game on Sunday morning, whatever, right? It's inspiring to watch a guy who's playing at a great level of a sport you like, right? I used to love watching basketball players. It used to inspire me tremendously. The other thing is you might even pick up, in a guy who's really fundamentally sound, you could pick up some skills. You'll never do it as well as him, but you could still pick up pointers and, you know, in tennis, you see that all the time. It's definitely something to be gained. Al achas kama with gdolim. This is the point he made. If you really watch a gadol, even for a brief moment, right, you don't have to be their Talmud. You just have to interact with them on any level. And if they're really a gadol, you could pick up just from this simple interactions, tremendous things. And that was, I really feel, my experience with Rav Aaron. I had three major interactions with him. Each one of them is going to be, they were brief, right? But each one, if I paid careful enough attention to either a comment he made, an etza he gave, an observation I made of what he was doing and how he handled something, it's tremendous musa. So, yeah, we're going to get more into it. So what were my interactions? So unbeknownst to me, when I married my wife, before I married her, she had a tremendous yichus that I didn't know about. Because, I don't know, we were married less than a year. It was in 1985. I get married, and we get invited to this chasana. And who's at the chasana, seated right next to us, is Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. I go, ooh. Turns out, so it's a little distant. I don't want to exaggerate it and make myself look too good. But so he's married to the sister of an aunt of my wife. That's the relationship. Nevertheless, it gave me a great opportunity, or it should have given me a great opportunity, to interact with Rav Aaron and take advantage. But I was very shy and intimidated, not ready to really go over and introduce myself. But there was someone there who knew me and my family background, and knew of a connection, another connection with Rav Aaron. So he actually went over to Rav Aaron behind my back and mentioned to Rav Aaron that my great-grandfather was someone whose name was Rav Chaim Yitzchak Block, who was also, he was a great Talmud Chacham and a good friend of the Soloveitchiks, and was a chavrusa to them, and were a mentor of theirs. I don't exactly remember the exact relationship. They were together, I think, in Volozhin at one time. And when he heard this, so Rav Aaron was all excited, came over to me, not me to him. Can you imagine that? What an absolute busha it was for me. Rav Aaron here is struggling as he walks over to my seat, because I wouldn't go over to him. And the person told him that I was too shy, whatever it was. Embarrassment on top of embarrassment. And he comes over to me and he gives me a Shalom Aleichem and he says the following. He says, your great-grandfather was an aristocrat. Remember that. Okay? You know? And that was the Bekisha. That was it. And then, you know, I got up, of course. And I'm like shaking, basically just shaking from the whole confrontation. And Rav Aaron smiled, shook my hand, sat back down. So immediately I'm wondering, what does that mean exactly, an aristocrat? Is that a good thing or not such a good thing? You know, you could take it in many ways. And we'll get back to it in a moment, but I later was told what he meant when he said that. It has a very specific meaning. In the meantime, I'm talking to my wife, Naomi. I said, wow. You should have told me you related to Rav Aaron. That's great. That's fantastic. And everyone at the table is saying, go over and get a bracha. You should go over and get a bracha. So I'm thinking, go over and get a bracha. Okay. Well, he's all excited. He thinks my great-grandfather was an aristocrat. That's pretty good. Maybe. Let's go over and get a bracha. I go over and with my wife. And we're coming back. And he says, you know, what do you want? Basically, he was like motioning. I said, well, we came to the Rav to get a bracha. And anyone knows a brisker, one of the last things you want to ask a brisker for is a bracha. And true to form, his whole affect changed dramatically. I think he was so disappointed that the great-grandchild of this person that he obviously held in high esteem was this, like, schnook asking for a bracha. So he goes, I felt so low at that moment.
Well, we know one thing, aristocrat does not mean schnook.
No, obviously not. So he goes to me, he goes, may the good Lord bless you. And he goes like this. Literally. May the good Lord bless you. And that was it. I go, oh my God. From the heights of, you know, wow. And so that was that. So we'll see. That has a lot of relevance. That attitude towards what I was doing, aside from the fact that it reflects a certain misnagdisha attitude, I think it reflects something else that's going to be very important that will come back in a few moments. My third pekisha. Okay, so that was it for meeting Rav Aaron at the family simcha. I actually was quite embarrassed to ever go over to him again after that. But 10 years later, approximately 10 years later, 12 years later, I met... what? I was hoping maybe he'd forget, right? So I happened to be sitting, I was learning in the YU Beis Medrash, and he was at that table with all these guys, including Rabbi Hartstein and the whole Chevra, the Hafer, anyone knows the Hafer, Rabbi Hoffman. And before, I always sat, my makom was right in their makom. So this was before he had come in, this on a particular morning, his shamish comes in, he had a mishamish that used to walk him in, comes to me and he tells me, come outside a moment. Rav Aaron's wife has a message for you. I go, you sure it's me? Like, I have nothing to do with anything. He said, no, just come out because you sit near him. He said, the message was that he had had a stroke, right? And at this point, he was absolutely forbidden by his doctors to drink anything hot. And his wife wanted me to know that if he should ask me for something hot to drink, absolutely don't give it to him. He's not supposed to have it. Okay. I figured, okay, what are the chances he's going to ask me for something hot? You know, he never asked me before. So I go back to my seat. I go, okay, got it. what do you think happens? Comes in, Rav Aaron comes in, he's brought in, he gets his breakfast, everything. He mamash lived in the Beis Medrash. That's what he did. That was his existence. At this point, it was the end. His last years, he just mamash lived there. He got his breakfast brought to him. I remember he had this little container of eggs and the whole thing. And then he taps me on the shoulder. Can you get me a hot cup of tea? So now, what am I supposed to do? Do I listen to the Gadol Hador or do I listen to his wife? So I go out and I'm like, it's a no-brainer, huh?
Because I gave you a bracha 12 years ago.
You should say, if you give me a bracha.
We had our bracha. I guess the stroke was helpful in the fact that he didn't remember who I was, but he did remember everything else. And he was sharp as anything still at this moment, despite everything else. Because what happened was I go out and I tell the shamash, I go, you know, I really don't want to be part of this. I'm not feeling comfortable anymore. Rav Aaron is, you know, because I first ignored him to some degree. I'm like saying, you really shouldn't have it. Get me a hot cup of tea. You know, like you wanted the hot cup of tea. So the shamish comes, you know, I went over to get the shamish and I said, look, you got to take care of this because he's really wanting, insisting on this cup of tea. So he comes over and he's going to get in the middle of it. And they come up with some kind of pshar. So he's going to put honey in the tea. Right? Because what's the problem? Problem is aspiration. You don't want, it's very difficult for someone who had a stroke to swallow properly. So hot liquids are particularly dangerous. But if you solidify it a little with the honey, so spoke Rabbi Dr. Aaron Soloveitchik, right? He's coming up with the Eitzah. Everything will be okay. The Shamish is going along with it. Rav Aaron's going along with it. I'm thinking about Mrs. Aaron Soloveitchik is probably not going along with it. And I know medically that's not necessarily the advice of the doctors. They're not going to go for that. So Rav Aaron finally says to me, he says, look, and this is the part I really wanted to get to. He goes, I understand. We'll put the honey in there, we're going to make it safer. And I understand there's still a risk. He says, but, you know, the honey in the tea makes me feel so good. He says, so, and sometimes when there's something that's a little bad and a little good, sometimes the best thing to do is you just forget the bad and just focus on the good. I got him the tea. Same thing with the food, right? 100%. So we'll see. This is going to be a third lesson. These three, I want to just remind you. Aristocrat,
no
bracha, and sometimes there's good and there's bad. Forget the bad, just take the good. So let's get back to our Shiloh. We'll see where these come into play. So the simcha of the simchas v'shoeva, where does it come from? The Rambam tells me it's coming from the Arba Minim somehow. And yet he tells me I also got to have all the dancing, the singing, the drinking, the eating, all that's got to be part of it. How could it be, right? Anyone learn the Sefer Orchos Tzadikim? Anyone learn that Sefer? Yeshiva Bachram, always learn that Sefer, right? Tikkun Amidos, it's a fantastic Sefer. It goes through 28 Sha'arim of different Midos, right? Starts with Gaiva and Anova. Those are the first two. Every Mida you can, how to perfect it within you. Sha'ar number 9 is Simcha. How do you perfect the Mida of Simcha in a person? So the first half of that shiur, the Orchos Tzadikim, focuses on what simcha is not. True simcha will not come from, and basically, all these things. The Beis HaMishta is not going to be the source of true simcha. So it can't be that that's really it. So what function does all this play in this simcha, whatever it is? So Rav Dessler has a beautiful explanation, right? And here we get a little Chassidish. And the source of the Hasidic Torah, guess who it is? Guess who gives the Hasidic Torah? The Vilna Gaon. Even better. Right? You think it was Hasidic, right? So listen to this one. This is what the Vilna Gaon does. He says, you want to know why by the Simchas Beis Shoeva they needed all this extra stimulus. He says, because you know human nature is funny, right? And I definitely can relate to this. Some people can't. You'll see what I mean. That was just a coincidence. Some people have a natural inhibition. An inhibition to letting out their true selves and letting in the truth and letting in true ruchnius. There's like the lashon that the Gra use, they have a klipa kasha. Some people don't have it, Baruch Hashem. I think they're very fortunate. A person who could be completely open and natural and free in an appropriate way, it's a great midah. I really think so. The other thing is it's not as long as you're not inappropriate, right? If you're appropriate, there's an advantage to being able to share yourself with other people. But most Jews are apparently not that way, the Gra said. And they have this klipa kasha. And in order to break it open, the other expression he uses, that Rav Dessler uses, it is you need to do a harisha on the sada of your lev. You got to plow the field of your heart. It's just like you can't plant anything in a field until it's plowed. Sometimes you can't let the ruchnias in, the simcha in, until you like plow it and prepare it. And that's the function of all the gashmias. All the gashmias is not the simcha itself. It's a means of getting there. It's a means of cracking open the klipa. So that's number one. But of course, it's not the simcha. So what's the simcha? So we get another insight into the simcha from Rav Nevinson. Rav Nevinson says the following. He says, there's a fundamental mistake everybody makes. When it comes to the Zman, starting in Elul, working its way through the Yamim Noraim, up to Sukkot and Shmini Aseres, what's the peak? What's the real goal of that period of time? What's the tachlis? So he says, he thinks most people think it's Yom Kippur. It's the level of Malachim, right? And then everybody looks at Sukkot and all this time is like a manucha. It's like, we did all that hard work, we went to Slichos, we did Tshuva, we did everything. We made it through the Yom Adin, we made it to Yom Kippur, we made it to the Heights. The ultimate, Ne'ilah, the shofar, that's the apogee, right? That's the top point. And then we get a little manucha, a little fun. He says that's completely lehefach. The goal, the tachlis, is the simcha. The means, the second means, to get to that simcha, is the Yamim Noraim, is Yom Kippur, is Rosh Hashanah. That's all just a way of, again, facilitating getting to what this true simcha really is. The simcha is something else. It's not the Yamim Noraim. The Yamim Noraim will not bring you true full simcha. It's necessary to get there, but it's never going to do it. Okay? So now I got two tools in getting to the simcha. I know I need my gashmias, my breaking of my klipa. I know I need the Yamim Noraim and all that to sort of get away the dross, get away all the averos, clean myself up to have this true simcha come in. So what's the true simcha? Where's it going to come from? It's the Arba Minim. That's what it is. The Arba Minim. It's what the Emek Bracha was telling me, the Rambam was talking about. How could it be the Arba Minim? What about the Arba Minim is Mesameachas? Why does it say that whole pasuk? U'lukachtum lechem Arba Minim, v'samachtum lifnei Hashem elokeichem shivas yom. Why? Anyone ever wonder about that? Does your Arba Minim make you particularly joyful?
I've never connected the second half to the first half.
Right.
I've always viewed it as too disjointed.
Oh, you're messing up.
Have you seen my
Aravas? Right. So, which brings me to a point. If you think about it, so I heard this from somebody who insists on remaining anonymous. I don't know why. But it's a very significant person. And they gave me the following shot to understand this. I had asked him originally when I saw the Emet Bracha. I said, he's telling me this whole thing about the Rambam, the Arba Minim. What's the Arba Minim have to do with the Simcha? So they knew this whole thing. They had a beautiful pshat. And the pshat goes like this. He said, what are Arba Minim? It's a fruit that's worth nothing, right? Who here likes to eat Esrog as much as everybody plays around with the jelly and the whole thing? But it's a very unpopular fruit. as a fruit, it's not worth much. The lulav, the hadassim, the ravas are even worth less. It's nothing. These are like nothing. And yet we're paying $70 for it or whatever. What gives it value? What gives these value? The chashivas we give it. And why do we give it chashivas? Because it's a mitzvah. It has kedusha. It has a very special status. The whole lesson of the Arba Minim is that you could take something that has very minimal value at face value, and through treating it a certain way, giving it a goal, giving it a purpose, giving it meaning, you can significantly increase its value. What's this a mashal for? A person, right? How much do you think a person's worth? Let's, if you start chemically, right? The chemical makeup of a human being, right? It's not much. That's being generous. I think it's inflation. I mean, when I was in high school, they always told me $1.35, right? Now it's up to like $6. So I guess, you know, most of it's water and the elements, the rest of it in terms of chemical value. Okay.
So no,
but then let's say, okay, you can up the value a little if you make it into a person who could be like a slave, right? That's something. But if a slave has no meaning and no goal and no purpose in his life, that value is going to cap at whatever the work value is, which is not that great. But you give a person significance and meaning in their life. You give them kedusha, you give them something that has worth. You make them somebody that's worthwhile, then they become priceless. Then their value, just like the Arba Minim became 70-fold in value, right? So too a person becomes magnified significantly in value once they have a goal and a purpose and meaning in their life.
So why do we need the simple by lots of other
hang on. That
like matzah, flour of wheat, you know, it's awesome. But at least you can eat it.
There's a certain simcha to every mitzvah. A certain simcha
that means. Well, you don't need this extra.
No, but hold it. I didn't say what the simcha was. So what's the simcha? The simcha is when a person's able to recognize that value within themselves. Right? That was the vort that this person was saying. That the simcha that's generated by learning the lesson of the Arba Minim is to be able to really recognize in yourself that level of value. That you have a spiritual value, that the significance to you, to your accomplishments in Ruchnius, that are of such a madrigal that your life is meaningful. I've encountered, even though I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, but let's say as a cardiologist, unfortunately, I would say close to 25% of the patients I see have some type of depression, believe it or not. Because depression is often accompanied by somatic complaints, such as chest pain and palpitations and all that kind of thing. And exertional limitations. And I got to say, one thing that I've seen, and anyone in psych here? No. That is a common feature to depressed people. It is a lack of purpose and meaning in their life. That is like at the, I would say that is at the foundation of depression. A person who has meaning and significance will rarely feel depressed. They'll be very happy. If you sense in yourself that your life is valuable and that you wake up in the morning with something valuable to strive for and do, you'll never be depressed. You'll have significant meaning, and meaning is the real key to happiness. And that was the vort about the Arba Minim. But Rav Nevinsel took it a little further, and he said the following. He said, how does a person come to recognize this? What's the trick? What is a person supposed to be doing at the simplest Beis Shoeva, right, to get to this point that they can start to express this simple? So he said, well, the trick is that you have to remember that the Yamim Noraim were means, were part of the means, right? If we summarize this whole thing, you do the material stuff to open the klipa, you do Yamim Noraim to get yourself spiritually cleansed, to get ready to finally reach this madrega of recognition of who you are and what you've accomplished in Simcha. He said, the most important element and aspect of that process is to remember not only is the Yamim Noraim not to be incorporated into this period directly, but you have to remember to push it out. You have to say, Yamim Noraim, stop. And Yemei Simchas Sukkos begin. And what's he emphasizing? He realizes this is a very difficult idea. What's he getting at? What do I mean? I should put the Yamim Noraim behind me? I should forget about them? He says, put behind you Yamim Noraim thinking. And start thinking like a Simchas Sukkos. How do I do that? So he gave two great examples to really bring home the message. He said, many people come late to shul. Right? Many people will come late to shachris. He says there's two types that he's noticed. There's the guy that comes in, right? And he just missed ashrei. So he comes in, he goes, "Ay, I can't believe it, they're up to ashrei already. That's horrible." Then he says, there's another guy that comes in a little later. And he goes, "Oh, Baruch Hashem, I made it by Yishtabach this time. This is great." So he says, or whatever your goal is. He says the trick, he says, "Jirmi Yamin Naraim." You know what kind of guy you should be? Be the first guy. Be the guy that says, "Oh, I'm missing ashrei. I got to correct myself. I'm doing mistakes. I'm making averos. I'm not up to snuff. I'm lazy. Whatever the problem is, I just have sleeping issues that other people don't have. Whatever my excuse is, right?" But during Sukkot, be like the second guy. Don't be like the first guy. Be happy that you made it by Aleinu, whatever it is. But what you should focus on, put that Yamin Naraim thinking totally out of your mind. Then he gave another great example. He really intended this for guys in yeshiva. He said, let's say you have a 4-hour morning seder, and you've been consistently being mavatil 3 hours and learning 1 hour. So he says, during Yamin Naraim, you should work on the 3 hours, right? During Sersim Yitshuva, Yom Kippur, focus on the 3 hours. What am I doing wrong? Why am I being mavatil 3 hours? But he says, after Yom Kippur is over and you're heading into Simchas Sukkos, just focus on the 1 hour. That's the only thing that counts. He says, the goal of the Simcha of Sukkos is not to worry at all about your failures, but it is to focus, concentrate, develop, internalize, maximize, optimize. I sound like my in-law. The positive accomplishments you've made so that you can achieve a Simcha in the satisfaction you'll feel at knowing the significance and meaning of your life that has accomplished so much. When I had asked somebody about what an aristocrat means, what did he mean when he said my great-grandfather was an aristocrat? Why was that such a supreme compliment? He made it look like it was like, you know, reserved for very special people. So this was exactly the type of idea. He said an aristocrat is somebody who is, because I'm thinking like maybe it's like an arrogant person. An aristocrat, you can imagine what he meant, was somebody who's like haughty. Oh, an aristocrat. But I said, you know, that's not very complimentary. He said, no, that's not what it means. When Rav Soloveitchik says somebody's an aristocrat, what he means is that they have achieved a level of dignity, of self-confidence and esteem, that they are completely at peace with who they are as a ruchnius person. That this is a person who carries himself with confidence that's not gaiva. It's not a gaiva confidence. It's a confidence of, it's a recognition of their sort of greatness spiritually, so that it gives them a very positive, smiling countenance. It's like the way if you go to visit Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he's an aristocrat. You see him, he's like smiling from ear to ear, and he's giving off this radiance of happiness and simcha. Why? Because, not in a gaivadic way, but he's in full recognition of who he is and what he's accomplished. Maybe during Yamim Naraim, he looks a little different. Maybe he's down, he'll be hard on himself, like you would imagine a gadol. But the rest of the time, and particularly during Sukkot, he's recognizing that. How does somebody achieve this? It's a difficult thing even to comprehend and to understand. To achieve it is clearly an avoda kasha. It's the Rambam meant. It's a very hard achievement to really get yourself to do this. Because you have to really be honest, and hopefully you have to have some good things about you, right? Most of us do, right? You have to be able to like draw them out, focus on them, and make them be the thing that leads to your simcha. The wine, the food, the rest of it, they broke the shell. But if you could just possibly get to encourage yourself to be excited about what you've done in terms of your ruchnias and focus on that, that'll lead to the true simcha. But it's something that is not going to work through a bracha, right? A person doesn't become a great Jew by getting brachas from, in all due respect, the Hasidus. This is what Rav Aaron was telling me. You know, you're a schnook if you come over here and you think you're getting places in life with your wife through a bracha. You want to become a great person, you want to achieve something, it's not going to be the bracha that it's doing. It's going to be hard work, and it's going to be self-accomplished. I think to me, that's the way I understood the brisker attitude, let's say, towards this bracha idea. Why they're not into it. There's no easy street. Right? It's something that is something that takes tremendous work. And finally, I think that the idea, the notion that when you have something that's good and bad, I think that's what's reflected here most significantly. A person's life is a mixture of good and bad, good accomplishments and some averos and some negatives. And there's a time for each, right? There's a time to focus on each, and there's an advantage on focusing on one at a particular time and on the other at another time. So just like the tea, right? It had the good side and the bad side. Rav Aaron wanted me to forget the bad now. Just let me enjoy it because it's going to do a lot for me now, right? He hit home with me because what he was saying to me is, look, you know, here I am, I'm whatever age, and there's not much pleasure he's getting back in life. There's not much that's going to invigorate him. This tea was incredibly significant to him. It probably was going to, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say, affect his learning for the morning and his whole mood for the rest of the day. So, yeah, there's this danger in theory there, in the bad, but there was a time for me to just forget being a doctor, forget that element of it, and focus on the geshma, focus on the positive of it. And that's, I think, the same message Rav Nevinsel is sending us in terms of achieving the simcha of Sukkah, which is the Rambam's intent was. The simcha Beis Shoeva was not generated by the Nisuch HaMayim. It was generated by the Arba Minim. In what sense? I really think the vort that this anonymous person told me is 100% correct, fits right in with Rav Nevinsel, which is this message that just like the Arba Minim, we're giving it incredible value through taking something that really has little monetary value in and of itself, and we're making it into a tremendous chashivas to us, worth so much money. So too, that we should be doing with ourselves. And I think the advice of Rav Nevinsel to do it by putting the Yamin Narayim behind us. Don't think like a Yamin Narayim Jew now. Think like a Sukkah Simcha Jew. And focus on all the positive. It should generate tremendous Simcha that we should be Zocha to enjoy for the entire Yom Tov.
Ve'chagecha ve'ayisa asameya v'samachta me